So, who here agrees that the United States should leave the United Nations? I imagine that the majority of you said yes, as do I. We both are totally in agreement with this fact, right? Here's the problem, and it's going to be explained. It's an article on The Observer by a guy named Pallavi Kakoti McHugh, former UN staffer. It's imperative the U.S. cut ties with the United Nations. His reasoning is correct, but the answer is what I'm concerned about, and so should you be. As a former United Nations staffer and invitee to UN University, I've been repeatedly asked if the United States should cut ties with the UN and what the future relationship between the U.S. and UN should be. Without hesitation, my answer is yes. The U.S. should back away from the UN. We should replace the UN with an international organization that is actually worthy of being funded by American taxes and is inaction, not just words, aligned with American values of freedom, liberty, justice, and equality for all. That right there is a solid reason the U.S. should leave the UN. Now, what he envisions is where I start to bring out the concern, and so should you. In fact, hang on. Let me know what you guys think about that in the comments. Should we leave the UN? Let me know what you think. I envision a new international organization that delivers what former President Woodrow Wilson, who founded the forerunner of the UN, League of Nations, wanted for Americans. Wilson wanted America to be part of a group of peace-loving and civilized nations with a high standard of morality. This does not exist in the current environment, where I've found evidence that UN staff practice racism, sexism, sexual exploitation and abuse, corruption, block sustainable development efficiency, and are unfair to Americans. Has anybody done their research on the League of Nations? We've been working for a while to expose the United Nations and, of course, their special interests in our Club of Rome series. But if we dig into the League of Nations, we find the timeline, we find the origins of it all. Because the United Nations is just another League of Nations. Let's put it that way. That's the easiest way I can put it. The League of Nations was an international organization headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, and was created after World War I, and the intent was to provide a forum for resolving international disputes. It was proposed originally by Woodrow Wilson as part of his 14 points plan for an equitable peace in Europe. The United States never became a member, but we're a member of the UN. We just weren't a member of the League of Nations. Republican presidents kept us out of it, even though they identified with a lot of the points. If we were to actually do a lot of maybe a timeline on the League of Nations and the UN and so on and so forth, a roadmap to global tyranny. They claim peace. They claim we want global peace, as this guy's the former UN staffer is claiming. We should leave the UN. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong, I agree, but his reasoning is where I draw the line. I envision a new international organization that delivers what former President Woodrow Wilson, who founded the forerunner of the UN League of Nations, wanted for Americans. Wilson wanted America to be a part of a group of peace-loving and civilized nations with a high standard of morality. Now, of course, with this group, they wanted to disarm Americans. Here's a chronology of the origins. Alfred Lord Tennyson penned the poem Locksley Hall, expressing his belief that Great Britain had a moral obligation to consolidate the world under British rule. 1870s. That was in 1842. This is in 1870s. Oxford professor John Ruskin embraced Tennyson's vision with students. I want to point something out here. With students. Many years ago, the environmentalists and the environmental activists, they used to blow up buildings. Now they teach our kids. Is there, I mean, are we seeing a problem with that? Because here's a perfect example. Oxford professor John Ruskin embraced Tenyson's vision with students, persuading them that they had a moral obligation to disseminate English culture and unite the world under British rule. By early 1900s, many held strategic positions in the English government, but none of his disciples would further the vision more effectively than Cecil Rhodes. In 1877, in his book, Confession of Faith, Cecil Rhodes wrote, "The society of the elect should inspire and even own portions of the press, for the press rules the mind of the people." The press rules the mind. Did you just hear? The press rules the mind of the people. The society should always be searching for members who might buy their position in the world by their energies or character forward the object. In 1888, Edward Bellamy also embraced Tenyson's vision, and his book, Looking Backward, helped spread the vision of a socialist world government. Bellamy clubs began forming across the USA. Among his followers was Andrew Carnegie, who believed in monopoly capitalism, socialism, a universal welfare system. Damn it, folks. If we don't wake up to this universal basic income, you guys have got to spread the message on that. Universal basic income is not the answer. Artificial intelligence is not the answer. With the ruling class of powerful capitalists who would control both governments and the people. That was written in 1888. Sound familiar? 1890, autumn, Rhodes sent his close friend, W.T. Stead, a letter explaining his plan for world government. "The key of my idea discussed with you is a society copied from the Jesuits as to organization. An idea which ultimately leads to the cessation of all wars and one language throughout the world. The only thing feasible is to carry this idea out is a secret one. The only thing feasible to carry this idea out is a secret one. Society, gradually absorbing the wealth of the world, to be devoted to such an object. Rhodes' universal peace would begin, according to him, after 100 years. And it would be exactly 100 years later, in the autumn of 1990, that President George Bush will spell out his new world order concept for universal peace and cooperation. According to Dr. Cuddy, Rhodes' letter would be published in W.T. Stead's article in Review of Reviews, May 1902. Looking back many years later, Professor Quigley described another step toward completion of this 100-year plan. Many of these men would undoubtedly be Rhodes' scholars. After 30 years, there would be between 2,000 and 3,000 men in the prime of life scattered all over the world, each one of whom, moreover, would have been specially mathematically selected toward the founder's purposes. I want to say something really quickly. I'm reading. This is a chronology. I know we're displaying pictures on the screen for you guys, but this is. I will leave this link so you guys can see it, because this explains quite a bit. So many people are searching for this imminent doom. Listen, if you focus too much on the imminent doom, and I'm not trying to take away from the reality that anything can happen at any moment, but if you focus too much on it, number one, you fall into fear, and that is totally wrong. Do not be afraid. Number two, you miss the trend. And when you miss the trend, it becomes hard to explain how this has been a 100-year plan. This wasn't an imminent, dude, we're going to crash the world, we're going to crash the economy in one day. No, this was 100 years. These people who created it are dead. But their plan lives on today. So you have to realize the people who are behind this, they're willing to wait. They're playing the long game. And so should we. But in the meantime, we must keep our eyes on the day-to-day. But don't you dare fall into fear. 1891, Rhodes' secret society The Society of the Elect is formally established. Rhodes is the general with Steed, Milner, and Reginald Belial Brett, Lord Esher, forming the Executive Committee. They were followed by the Circle of Initiates, with an association of helpers, later organized by Milner as the semi-secret round table groups beyond them. 1895, the Fabian Socialists establish the London School of Economics. Though the Fabians are dominated by an intellectual elite, and the group Rhodes' Round Table members is dominated by a financial elite, they both believe in a socialist relationship between governments and the masses. 1891. To select and train world leaders worthy of his vision, Cecil Rhodes established the Rhodes Trust and the Rhodes Scholarship, R-H-O-D-E-S, it's not R-O-A-D-S in case you were thinking that, fund. He had acquired the wealth needed to pursue his global ambitions in the gold and diamond mines of southern Africa. The power and influence of Rhodes's scholars, who have pursued their sponsor's vision, has, through the last century, helped steer progress toward global governance. 1902, Cecil Rhodes died, and Lord Alfred Milner took control of the Rhodes Trust. In 1909, Lord Milner's secretive roundtable group was established. Professor Quigley exposed some of the evolving ties between the global banking fraternity and these evolving semi-secret discussion and lobbying groups, which helped foment World War I as a means to raise public support for a League of Nations. 1913, January. President Woodrow Wilson wrote in his book, The New Freedom, "We are in a new world. In the new order, government and business must be associated closely. We stand in the presence of a revolution, which will come in peaceful guise." He continued with this amazing revelation. Remember, this was happening almost a century ago. What we see today is the result of this hidden but rising iceberg. 1913, December 23rd, President Wilson signed the Federal Reserve Act. One of the individuals who helped to plan the Federal Reserve is Frank Vanderlip, president of Rockefeller's National City Bank. 1915, according to Rees Committee, the Special House Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations, which would later investigate tax-exempt foundations that funded communist organizations and their international goals. The Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Listen, the people who are in large part behind this multipolar world order ideology, who have stated this openly, are individuals who are involved with the Carnegie Endowment. They're involved with the global think tanks. They're involved with the World Economic Forum. Now, oftentimes, they're sitting in smoky rooms and blah, 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 whatever kind of ideology that goes with the cabal, secret meetings. But oftentimes, their meetings are being published to YouTube. Oftentimes, their think tank organizations are right out in the open saying this stuff. And you got to wonder, like, who are these people? But these individuals who sit at these think tanks and who sit at these forums, they're influencing our governments. They're influencing our world leaders. They're causing events. 1917. Dr. Monteith wrote that J.P. Morgan and his associates controlled 25 of our most influential newspapers. The atrocity stories about the war were designed to raise public support of American entry into World War I, an essential step toward public acceptance of a world government, according to the Congressional Record. 1917, after Lenin's triumph in Russia, Colonel Mandel House, President Woodrow Wilson's main advisor, and, as President Wilson called him, my alter ego, cabled the president the following message from Paris. "There have been cabled over and published here statements made by American papers to the effect that Russia should be treated as an enemy." What in the world are we witnessing today? It is almost like history is on repeat. It is exceedingly important that such criticism should be suppressed. Now, I'm not trying to talk about what Russia and Lenin did back then. I'm just saying we're seeing the same thing happen today. And we know how bad mainstream media is. Now, this is the last piece, and I'll leave the link so you guys can read the rest. But this is a very good chronology of the events that have transpired since the 1800s to build this new world order. 1917. In its report published in 1954, the Rees Committee, the Special House Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations, explained and quoted the official minutes of the Board of Trustees of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And, of course, this stretches all the way to 2012. And there's a whole bunch of sources that go with it as well. So, that said, this is a very interesting page. It's at crossroad.to/excerpts/chronology/un.htm. And again, I said I'll leave the link, but this is just a very interesting chronology of events. Because it obviously paints a picture of why we do not want the League of Nations. But again, according to the Observer article, or the former UN staffer, we should cut ties with the UN. That is absolutely correct. And here's this too, in Foreign Policy, the website. White House seeks to cut billions in funding for United Nations. This was posted on March 13th by Colm Lynch. And this is happening today. We're cutting funding to the UN. Here's this. In order for a new world order to be constructed, and the one that we've all been warning about for a long time, the question is, are they going to use the UN to do it? Or are they going to destroy the UN and the US and other countries and build something else? That's always been the question. Socialism leads to communism. Currently, it would be an understatement to say that the UN is based on socialism. It is well proven that they are based in socialism. And they're trying to establish that law or that rule of law, the socialism rule of law, in the U.S. and override our Constitution. Well, not today. Not today. That's not going to happen right now. There has to be something before that, and it's going to be a war. Most likely war coupled with some other events, and that would, of course, bring the world to its knees, not just the U.S., and then we would... I'm not saying we as we would willingly. I'm just saying then the world, we all 8 billion people, would most likely have to follow this new world order because it's order out of chaos. Now, you got to remember, this isn't like an immediate, imminent doom plan. This is an agenda. And their agendas take time. As I just read to you in the chronology, that was a 100-year plan. Keep that in mind. State Department staffers have been instructed to seek cuts in excess of 50% in U.S. funding for U.N. programs, signaling an unprecedented retreat by President Donald Trump's administration from international operations that keep the peace, provide vaccines for children, monitor rogue nuclear weapons programs, and promote peace talks from Syria to Yemen, according to three sources. This, again, was written on Foreign Policy. Now, as far as the word retreat, no, that is not the correct word. We're getting out of the global governance atrocity. I mean, that's the only word I can come up with. But the problem is, what happens after we do? We see throughout the headlines and the trend is that China is set to replace the U.S. as the superpower politically and economically. Economically, it's already practically been accomplished because of what happened under Obama. But politically, globally, if the UN were to side with China over the US, as we know is going to happen, and it already is starting to be underway, because we can see the Sustainable Development Plan, and we can see through that China is the leader of sustainable development, blah, blah, blah. You get where I'm going. The push for such draconian measures comes as the White House is scheduled on Thursday to release its 2018 budget proposal, which is expected to include cuts of up to 37% for spending on the State Department, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and other foreign assistance programs, including the UN, in next year's budget. The United States spends about $10 billion a year on the United Nations. So we're supposedly going to be cutting this in excess of 50%. So instead of spending roughly $10 billion a year, we might be only spending $5 billion or less a year to the UN. Now, it remains unclear whether the full extent of the steeper UN cuts will be reflected in the 2018 budget, which will be prepared by the White House Office of Management and Budget, or whether, as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has proposed, the cuts would be phased in over the coming 3 years. One official close to the Trump administration said Tillerson has been given flexibility to decide how the cuts would be distributed. Interesting. So, ladies and gentlemen, it appears as though we're getting out of the UN. But is that going to further implement their plan of creating the new world order? As I've said many times, we're on the road to the multipolar. We're already at it. And of course, we're at phase three, and phase four is the new world order. And in this multipolar world order, this world of constant uncertainty and division, it would actually seem fit if we left this peacekeeping body, or this unifying source, or this unifying bond with the UN. Because then more strife could take place. Now, again, they're going to play it that way. Or at least that's how they could play it. I'm not trying to make a prediction. I'm just obviously calling out what's in the headlines and the trend. Is getting out of the UN a good thing? You absolutely believe it. It is a great thing. The question is, what happens after? That's all I got. God bless and carry on. Go Unlimited. Act now and save almost 50% on a yearly membership. Use promo code SUBPRO15. Find out more at christiantruther.com/info.